The theme of the book of Matthew is Jesus is the King. Theme of the book of Mark, Jesus is servant. Theme of the book of Luke, Jesus is man. And so you see in that one, he is the Son of Man all the time. You see that title rather than Son of God. And you see in the book of John, Jesus is God. Wow. I think we need to have a whole sermon series on that. Oh, how about today? All right. Well, just briefly. What is interesting, if you look at those being the themes, if you think about, these are the themes of these Gospels. When the Gospel is written out, remember when I teach you about the book of Matthew, everything in the book of Matthew goes toward one theme. Jesus is the King and he has a kingdom. And when that book was being compiled, the author looks at each story he had available to him about Jesus, and he picked out the ones that had to do with his theme. And he put them in the order that had to do with his theme. And that's what he used to determine if it went in the book or was left out of the book. Very important. And so if you look at these themes, Jesus is the King, Jesus is the man, Jesus is the servant, Jesus as God, what you see is very significant, that in at least two of those books, Mark and John, you have absolutely nothing to do with the birth of Christ. Nothing. Which is kind of interesting, isn't it? See, the point is that in the first century, the birth of Christ wasn't the big deal that it is in the 20th century. The 20th century is a big deal because everybody gets to run around and shop and give people gifts. But it wasn't that big deal. And for most of history, it wasn't quite that same big deal it is today, at least the way it is practiced now. The focal point of Jesus was not his birth. It was who he was in his life as a man, especially in his few years of ministry. That was the focus, not the circumstances of his birth. And so it's important when we look at those who believed and those who didn't believe, when we look at their response to Jesus, nobody looks at his birth and looks at the circumstances and tries to make their opinion of Jesus. Although in one small way, when we'll get to that, it was that way. But when we look at the contrast between those who believe and those who don't believe, when we look at them in terms of these four major areas of who Jesus is, as man, as king, as servant, and as God. First, those who view Jesus as only a man, and those who viewed him as a sinful man. So he's either perfect man or he's a sinful man. The Bible tries to show him as perfect man, right? And those who didn't believe saw him as a sinful man. Jesus, of course, was born of Adam, just as all of you are. If you look at the beginning of the book of Matthew, you see him there as the son of Adam, first of all. He was completely human. He was a man, but he wasn't sinful like Adam was. In the book of Romans, chapter 5, Paul goes into this long explanation showing how we have all inherited sin from Adam. We're all under condemnation because of Adam's sin. And that's not the case of Jesus. And so one of the things that Paul likes to draw there is the head and all those who are under the responsibility of that one person. So Adam, in one sense, when he took that fruit and ate it in the garden, he brought condemnation to all of you here this morning. So when you get to heaven and you see Adam and Eve there, you can talk to them about that event. I don't know what you'll say. But the point is that when we look at Jesus, what he does is our new head, when we move from the column Adam to the column Jesus, we have this other person who stands as our representative before God, a new head, and one who is without sin. Jesus brings righteousness to all of us. And so it's not based on our individual goodness. It's not based on whether or not we ourselves would have eaten from the tree anyway. It's all about what Jesus has done. So in 1 Corinthians 15, it says, the first man, Adam, became a living being. The last Adam, in other words, Jesus Christ, a life-giving spirit. The spiritual one comes second and brings us spiritual life. So in Adam, you inherited a sinful nature, but in Christ, you inherit a heavenly nature. You were restored. The glory lost at the fall is restored to you. Jesus was not only the son of Adam, he was also the son of Abraham. son of Abraham, right? That's the next one in the book of Matthew, the son of Adam, the son of Abraham. And in that sense, we see him as the promised seed. We've covered this recently in the book of Galatians, remember? In Galatians chapter 3, 16, the promises were spoken to Abraham and to his seed. The scripture does not say and to seeds, meaning many people, but and to your seed, meaning one person who is Christ. So as a child of Abraham, he is the one who brings all the blessings promised to Abraham. God said to Abraham, all those who bless you, I will bless. All those who curse you, I will curse. And all nations on earth will be blessed through you. That blessing comes through Christ, that blessing. So he's very importantly the child of Abraham. He was also the son of Shar, Mary, the son of Mary. And this comes as the fulfillment of Genesis 3:15. I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your offspring and hers. He will crush your head, and you will strike his heel. This is what was said to the serpent. So here Jesus comes as the fulfillment of the blessing promised to the woman in the Garden of Eden right after the fall. This is Jesus' role here, born of Mary, born of woman, to come and fulfill this particular promise as the perfect man, the anticipated one of all time. So the thing you need to understand and remember about Jesus is that if he is not a man, if he is only God and not a man, if he came and he only appeared to look like a man, as some people would theorize, Jesus just walked around in this ghostly, ethereal form and he only pretended to be a man, then we're lost. And Paul makes this point that he came under the law, as a man under the law, to fulfill the law. That as a human being, he did the perfect fulfillment of it. He did it as a human being, but only as a perfect human being. Because if Jesus was just a man, just another child of Abraham, just another child of Adam, just a plain old ordinary person, then he was sinful too. But he comes as a perfect man, but he comes as one who can perfectly fulfill the law in order to bring righteousness to us, it says in Romans 8, 3 and 4. But the unbelieving people didn't see Jesus as a perfect man, did they? How did they look at Jesus in all these same roles? They looked at him as a child of Adam, but they looked at him as just being another sinful child of Adam, just as they were. They looked at him being a child of Abraham, but just another child of Abraham, just as they were. And we see this come to a head in John chapter 8, 51 to 59, when Jesus is talking to them about children of Abraham. He says, I tell you the truth, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death. At this, the Jews exclaimed, now we know that you're demon-possessed. Abraham died, and so did the prophets. Yet you say that if anyone keeps your word, he will never taste death. Are you greater than our father Abraham? He died, and so did the prophets. Who do you think you are? Jesus replied, if I glorify myself, my glory means nothing. My Father, whom you claim as your God, is the one who glorifies me. Though you did not know him, I know him. If I said I did not, I'd be a liar like you are. But I do know him and keep his word. Your father, Abraham, rejoiced at the thought of seeing my day. He saw it and was glad. So he ties himself to being the one who is the promised fulfillment of the promise given to Abraham. And then they say to him, you are not yet 50 years old, and yet you claim to have seen Abraham. And Jesus said, before Abraham was born, I am. And at that point, they decided they really wanted to kill him. This was a very significant thing. He's saying, I'm a child of Abraham, but I'm greater than Abraham. I knew Abraham before Abraham was. Very, very astonishing thing. As for whether or not he's the child of Mary, they didn't doubt he was the child of Mary. That was not a problem for them. They just didn't know who the dad was. That was where they had the problem with Jesus. And they used that very frequently in him. They loved to call him Mary's son. They didn't call him Joseph's son. They called him Mary's son because they loved to point out his questionable birth. They knew who the mother was, but not the father. And that was the whole problem with them. They knew the mother, but they didn't know the father. And the father, of course, was God. And Jesus again and again and again said to them, if you knew my father, you'd know who I am. The thing that they claimed to use against him, he used right back at them. Jesus was not only perfect man, but he came as the servant of the Lord, the promised fulfillment of all the promises of the prophets, especially the prophet Isaiah, talking about the servant of the Lord who would come. So Jesus comes as a servant of the Lord, and yet they looked at him as a servant, but only as a servant of self. They said he was completely serving himself in everything that he did. Not only does Jesus set the example at the very end when he washes his disciples' feet, showing them service, showing them how to love one another, he came to show what was the main service he came to do. His death on the cross, yes. That is his service that he came to do. And Jesus said, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. That was his main purpose in coming. But those who didn't believe, they said Jesus was only self-seeking. They were suspicious of them. They said everything he was doing, he was just trying to overthrow the religious order that was there in his day and to take it over, create himself an earthly kingdom. And that was certainly nothing at all that he wanted to do. So the people were, the thing that the people accused Jesus of wanting to do, be self-seeking, the reason they accused him was that was what their own hearts were. They were just saying he was just like them again. The ungodly do the same thing. They look at God and they look at the church in the same way. Certainly there are those in the church who are self-seeking, but they aren't really following Christ, are they? They're suspicious, the people outside the church. They don't want to serve God because they fail to see that serving God is really... the only way to really help yourself is to serve God, but not in the way the unbelievers see it. They think that serving God is a matter of loss to what they could have for themselves rather than gain. And so the unbelieving selfishly fear losing what they believe is valuable. So they can't follow Christ. They can't practice sacrificial love. They can't take up their cross and follow him. The third thing we see Jesus, we see him as the king, as the Messiah. And this is where he's the son of David, as Brandon was mentioning earlier. He's recognized as the Messiah right from the start. When he comes to the temple for his dedication, he's just a baby, and two people are there that recognize him as the Messiah. And who are they? Simeon and Anna. Simeon and Anna. And they recognize Jesus right away as being the Messiah, even though he's just been born. And that's found in Luke chapter 2, 25 to 32, that he is a light for the light for revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of the people Israel. This is a very, very important event. He's coming in the house of David, and so you see the royal lineage presented in the book of Matthew and Luke, showing that he is the son of David through Mary and through Joseph and both lines of the family. As king, we've seen this as we've gone through the book of Matthew many times. Jesus comes as the king, but he doesn't come as the king of the earthly kingdom. This is what throws them all off. They're expecting him, if he's going to come as the king, to be king of Israel in a very literal and physical sense. And so some were offended by him that he doesn't overthrow the Romans. Some were offended that he comes to overthrow the Romans. And they both missed the point. And he came to do neither. He came to overthrow sin within our hearts and set up his kingdom within the hearts of men. As king, he went around and creating laws for his own kingdom that his disciples would follow. And that was in contrast to the view that the Pharisees had of what rules had to be followed. And they always viewed Jesus and his disciples as breaking the rules that they had set up. And he said, in my kingdom, these rules don't apply in the same way. So they would say, look, your disciples are doing what is unlawful in the Sabbath. And he said, hey, I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. I can do whatever I want. I think you missed the point here. So Jesus had authority, great authority. And this is what was very interesting. His authority was something that Gentiles could recognize, but Jews would miss. Because Jews were so caught up in looking for him to be something that he wasn't. So when Jesus comes to Gentiles to offer healing, he'll come to them. And he'll say, I'll come and heal your servant. And the Gentile will say, oh, I'm not worthy to have you come to my house. Just say the word and it will happen. I know what authority's like. And Jesus would always, he'd be astonished. And he'd say, I haven't found faith like this anywhere in Israel. And he's dealing with the Gentiles. So they failed to understand what Gentiles could understand. The kingdom was something that wasn't like an earthly kingdom at all. And it was God's kingdom. They missed Jesus as being king because they didn't understand the kingdom. So they saw Jesus as this imposter who came to set up a kingdom that wasn't his own. They didn't see him as the Christ. They saw him as a lawbreaker. And the reason they missed him as the Christ, because they had a false assumption of who the Christ would be. And they were looking for somebody that wasn't like Jesus at all. So they accused Jesus and his disciples of doing all these things that they couldn't do. What happens if you are unable to recognize Jesus as the Christ? You are unable to enter the kingdom. And that is the problem. And that's the problem that a lot of people have today. They look at Jesus, but they don't see him as the King of the Kingdom of Heaven. And that is why they can never enter the kingdom. They can never enter the kingdom until they recognize him as King of the Kingdom of Heaven. Not just someone who came claiming he was a king, especially king of earthly kingdom, but King of the Kingdom of Heaven. The final one is very significant. Jesus came proclaiming that he was God. And to all those around him, every time he said he was God, they saw him as a blasphemer. Quite a different way of looking at him. When he says he is the Son of God, Luke 22:70, they all ask, "Are you then the Son of God?" He replied, "You are right in saying I am." I mean, how much clearer does that get? It's pretty clear. Or when he says in John 10:30, "I and the Father are one." Very, very bold claims. But those who did not believe, they said he was a blasphemer, and they still do today if they don't believe in him. So I like this passage from John 10. The Jews gathered around saying, "How long will you keep us in suspense?" I mean, as if he's done this, as if he's kept them in suspense, and he has told them, "If you are the Christ, tell us plainly." They wanted a Christ. They wanted a Christ who would overthrow the Romans, but they didn't want a king who was just running a spiritual kingdom that wasn't going to get them what they wanted. And Jesus said, "I did tell you, but you didn't believe it." So you don't want to hear that I'm the kind of king that I am. Remember, even John had that problem. When John's in prison, he sends his disciples, "Are you the Messiah who was to come, or should I be expecting somebody else?" And, you know, poor John, he was expecting a king who would be different than the king that came. I mean, if you're the Messiah, why am I in prison? This is not falling into place the way I really want it to be. And Jesus said, "The miracles I do in my Father's name speak for me, but you don't believe them because you're not my sheep." This is very, very important. So then Jesus says, "I and the Father are one." And at this, they picked up stones to stone him. And Jesus says, "What are you doing? I've shown you miracles. Is that why you're going to stone me?" He said, "No, not for the miracles, but because you, a mere man, are claiming to be God." See, they recognized he was claiming to be God. There was no doubt in their minds he was claiming to be God. Some people would look at that and say, "Well, Jesus never said he was God." No, the Jews didn't miss that point. He was claiming to be God, and they understood it very well. Why do you think they wanted to kill him? In Matthew chapter 26, the high priest says to him, "I charge you under oath by the living God. Tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God." And he says, "Yes, it is as you say. But I say to all of you, in the future you'll see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven." And the high priest tore his clothes and said, "He has spoken blasphemy. Why do we need any more witnesses?" And that's why they killed him. They recognized his words were very, very pointed and obvious. There were those who said he was insane, possessed by the devil, glutton and drunkard, but really, it was his claim to be God, claim to be the king of God's kingdom that they just couldn't live with. So there remains to this day the same dichotomy in understanding Jesus. But in determining your spiritual destiny, you have to be one of the faithful believing. You must believe that Jesus was a perfect man, that he was the servant of God that Isaiah promised, that he was the king of God's kingdom, and that he was God. You must see that. You must see Jesus not only as a human child in a manger, a baby. You have to see him as the suffering king of God's kingdom. When a person comes to Christ, Jesus accepts them just as they are, but he requires that they accept him just as he is. He is king and God. That is a huge thing for you to accept. We think, well, that's easy. I mean, if you're raised in the church, yeah, Jesus is king, he's the God. It's very easy for you to accept that as you've come to that. But to really grasp what is meant by that, that he is your king and your God, is a very, very, very significant thing. That means that when he says to you now, take up your cross and follow him and live a life of sacrificial love, you must do that. And to the extent you don't do that, you proclaim you don't believe him. Very, very important. People like Christmas. Why do you think we like Christmas so much? It's Because we get gifts, yeah. Thanks, Melanie, for being so honest. But in terms of Christianity, why can culture, our culture, accept Christmas so easily? You know, they don't accept Jesus as king. They don't accept him as God, but they can handle the gift giving and the baby in the manger. They can do that because the baby in the manger is safe. The nice thing about babies is they don't talk to you yet. All right? They just sit there and they're just so cute, right? The other thing about babies is they do demand. They just have very few demands. It's just this kind of crying demand. But we sing the song, Little Lord Jesus, no crying. We put him in the manger and we make him mute. He doesn't even have to cry. He's not even asking for food. He's the perfect baby, right? He doesn't even bother us. We can go to bed and sleep through the night. No words, no demands. We can ignore that baby. But you can't ignore someone who stands before you and say, take up your cross and follow me. Otherwise, bad things will happen to you. A very, very different person. But we lose sight of that. We like Christmas because the baby in the manger makes no demands of us. We can sit around and open our gifts given to us and forget the little nativity scene in the corner. But you can't forget somebody who stands before you and say, I took up my cross, you take up yours. That's the one that's difficult. That's the one that's difficult to stand before.